Till we're all growing a beard. A man's face should never be bare. We just want some facial hair. We're anticipating, yeah, everyone's waiting for beer.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Behind the Beards. And in case you're new here, we try to pull the curtain back and reveal the things that go on in the hearts and minds of your ministers and ministry leaders. This season, we've taken a shift. I like the shift. We've tried to look at a few more practical ways that we can just promote people and encourage them to live the Christian life. And I'm Joshua Fowler. I'm a family connections minister, Pine Tree Church of Christ. And my brother, Aaron Partlow, is a youth minister at the Pine Tree Church of Christ. Still weird to say.
Seasoned veteran. You know, when you tell people every week that you're like, we've taken a shift, and I like the shift, it sounds like you're trying to convince yourself.
I think we need to maybe change that intro a little bit, because we're not necessarily revealing the hearts and minds of ministers this season. We've really been kind of sticking to some more practical stuff.
That's true.
And we still do that. We still try to come back to that, but it doesn't have the same intentional focus on that as it did when we first started. So
I do like the shift too. I was thinking, we haven't had a guest on in a long time.
That's true.
We should search for a guest.
We need a guest. Maybe we can find a guest and do a live guest podcast from Redbeards.
There we go.
A couple weeks at SoulQuest.
SoulQuest. Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
What's a
good week? You having a good week so far?
I'm having a good week.
It's good.
We got wedding planning and stuff. Jody's getting married in 3 weeks.
That's wild.
3 weeks. Yeah, June 5th. So yeah, less than 3 weeks. It is wild. We're excited. We're happy for her. She just moved into her apartment this past week. And I think everything's kind of hitting her all at once. She's adulting now then. Mm-hmm. You know, she's got a little job so she can pay rent and stuff. She had to go grocery shopping for like ketchup and mustard and all the things that you kind of just are always there and have always been there when she wanted them at the house. But
right.
Like, oh, you actually have to buy those.
Adds up. Yeah. And they also expire too.
And
you expire. have to actually check the ketchup every once in a while, you know?
That's been good. But it's just so nice to be close enough that Heather was able to run up 2 weekends in a row and kind of help her out there. So it's been pretty cool.
I was going to say, I bet that is like super nice. Was it 4 hour drive?
Yeah, 4.5.
Which really isn't bad at all. So for all you in Oregon and stuff like that who are complaining about like 4 hour drives, it's really not that bad.
It's really not that bad. Getting ready for the summer in the youth ministry though. So
it's a nightmare. it's a nightmare. I hate, everyone's like, oh, don't you love the spring? And I'm like, yeah, I love the weather, but like getting people to sign up for stuff is like pulling teeth, it feels like. Every year I think I get more stressed out trying to get people signed up, trying to justify costs and all sorts of stuff, because you're trying to get people signed up and figuring out what it was, and people just like, they just like wait till the last minute or all sorts of stuff like this, and it's really, really, really stressful. And like, it gets to the point where it's like, I don't know what more I can do than what I've already done. And so then I get to a point of stress where I just go, I've done everything I can, and it's on them. Like, I just have to like let it go. And I just have to come to this place where it's like, listen, I've done everything I can. And so it's on parents. It's on the teenagers to like do that. I have sign up boards. I have QR codes. I have emails that go out weekly. It's in the bulletin every week. We post it on our Instagram and our Facebook group. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. And we love the spring and we love the summer.
Yeah.
But preparing for the summer is brutal.
Really it's is. Not. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, that's just like, that's the stress level of youth ministry for me that they don't prepare you for in college, or you have to learn how to manage it and deal with it is the just getting people to commit and to sign up for stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I think the hard part maybe, I don't know how to help people really understand that I do have to prepare for that July event in May.
Right. Yeah.
Because once June 1st hits, you know, we've got a bunch of things back to back, and I don't have that time to prep like we normally do.
And it's it reminds me a lot of being like a school teacher, and they're like, listen, it's a big project. Don't wait for the week before. And everybody waits for the week before, and they're cramming and all this kind of stuff. And you're just like, listen, I told you not to wait for the week before, kind of an idea. And I guess like maybe I've talked to some people who say like, hey, if you sign up by this date, it's this price. And if you sign up by this date, then it's this price, you know? And so they end up charging more. And so maybe that's a route that I'm going to have to go down eventually. I don't know. We'll see. That's just like, it's one of those things. It's one of those emotional connections to youth ministry that you don't really get prepared for. It's, you know, it's kind of like if you have a ministry that you absolutely love, or you grew up, like I grew up with a New Year's Eve party. If you asked me, Aaron, what was your favorite church event of the entire year? It was the New Year's Eve party. I love the fact that like church people went to church in their PJs. We had a smorgasbord of snacks and board games, and we played board games. And then at 11:30, we went up and sang for 30 minutes into the new year. And then we prayed and we went home, you know, at like 12:30, you know, that was my favorite event of the entire year. I have never done that anywhere outside of the Oregon City Church of Christ. I just never like everyone's like, oh, well, we've got plans. We're doing stuff with a, you know, and it's just not a like a church kind of event kind of a thing. And so that's like an emotional thing that I had to deal with, almost like grieving a loss in a sense, because that was a ministry. That was a ministry. That kind of,
where are we going?
Well, sometimes ministries die off. Sometimes ministries have to die off in order for new ministries to grow, because as far as I know, they have not invented a way to put more hours in the week or the month. You only have the same amount. And so if you're going to add new stuff, you always have to take away stuff. And when you take away stuff, there's a grieving process, even for ministries and for mission trips and things that you've done. I remember in Central, when I switched our focus from Wichita Work Camp to Soul Quest, there was a grieving process. There was a grieving process for the people in Wichita who are used to us coming down every year. We had the same host family, love them. They were so awesome and accommodating just for our group. But there was a mindset shift, and there was a switch for some of our teenagers who loved Wichita Work Camp and Soul Quest. And I said, listen, we're only doing one, so you got to choose. And we chose Soul Quest. And so we, you know, we switched. And there was a grieving process there. So I think sometimes we have to reset our understanding of what grief is, and that grief isn't only related to, you know, the death of a loved one or something like that.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to say probably, especially for men in the generation that I grew up in, the expression of grief was never really taught. You know, we always had, hey, real men don't cry, was kind of always the theme. And I remember, you know, there weren't very many, you know, men in my life that I saw really grieve. And this is even over death. You know, there was kind of an expectation of this stoic, strong, you know, masculinity that never really understood the value of grieving. And so if I really don't even learn how to express that in death, to really see the nuances of grieving other things in life become even more and more difficult. So this was kind of a, it's one of the things that Heather and I have kind of been through with children. Our youngest child has left the house, grown up, moved out. And so at 45, we were empty nest. And, you know, with each one, we have really experienced that so very differently. Of course, I'm sad for my kids to not be around, but I'm really excited for what's next. And it took me a while to give Heather the space that she needed to really grieve her kids leaving the house, moving on to the next phase of life, because she had a, mothers and fathers just have very different connections,
yeah,
you know, with the kids. And Heather always, she worked from home, and so she was able to be home, and she's been home with those kids for 23 years. And now the last one's gone. And she's still excited about what's to come too, but there's a different process of moving into that next phase of life. Mm-hmm. Kind of like putting away the 4-month-old clothes, where the, you know, is it 0 to 3 and then 3 to 6. When your kids grow out of that stage and you're packing up those clothes.
We just grieved that. I can really, when you just said that, I just really related to that because, when Sam grew out of clothes, man, I was ready to pack them up, donate them. Who's got a baby? Who needs clothes? Who needs clothes? Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Here's clothes. Here's clothes. Here's clothes. All this kind of stuff. And Lauren was like, well, let's just pack it up and let's save it for a while. Let's save it for a while. We moved, I think it was 10 boxes of clothing and things all from Sam's like baby years, here to Texas. And it wasn't, we've been here 2 years, a little over 2 years, almost 2.5. I told Lauren, I said, hey, let's go through those boxes. Like, now's the time. We've got a little bit of extra money. We really want to make that storage area that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Utilize the space, all that kind of stuff. Let's get into it. Let's get some shelves and put it in and get things off the ground and things like that. Pulled all those boxes out. We got rid of like almost all of it. But it was a long process. It wasn't a, oh yep, this is a box of that, throw it in your car and take it to Goodwill, throw it in your car. It was a, let's go through it. Let's like add these to our memories and things like that. And so there was like this process of going through it. And there was an emotional process. And it took me a while to learn some of these processes where it's not about me pushing her through it. It's about me experiencing it with her, you know, as our husband, you know.
Well, so we're at lunch on Sunday, Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you saw, but there was a lady who came in. She had a daughter, and her daughter was almost up to her shoulder. That's how tall she was.
Hmm.
I didn't know that until she put her down, because the mother was carrying the daughter like a toddler.
Oh, wow.
And when she came by, all I saw was this, like, man, that's a massive leg wrapped around that woman. And then she set her down. I'm like, oh, that's a big kid that she just carried into the... And it made me think, just recently I saw, I think it was a TikTok, and one of them said, just think, someday you will pick your child up, and when you set them down, you will be setting them down for the last time, and you'll never pick them up again.
Well, that just makes me cry. Thank you.
I know.
That was like, appreciate that.
I was like, whoa. But then I saw this lady, and I'm like, well, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you can't. But, you know, but those are those moments that there's a passing of time, and it's natural. But mm-hmm. we have to take the time to really sit and grieve the things that we've lost while we enjoy what's ahead. I think of birthdays, you know, when you get mm-hmm. to the 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, so a lot of times the temptation is to like, oh, I'm getting old. But it's not necessarily that we're getting old. It's that we're looking at things that are past. Something struck me when I was talking to my mother Sunday night. She asked if we were in Austin when so-and-so was there. And I said, Mom, you realize we left Austin almost 30 years ago.
Whoa.
It's been 28 years.
Mm-hmm.
28 years in June since I moved out of Austin to go to college. And she said, Josh, that means I'm getting old.
Yeah.
So getting... there's all kinds of things that we really have to grieve as we look forward. And I think our typical response has kind of left us kind of in a place where we haven't dealt with it very well.
The most Oregonian thing about me today is my phone number.
Your you phone know, number, yeah.
Is I still have a 503 phone number. It's the last grips of my Oregonian-ness that roots. I even have. I have, my dad talked to me the other day. He's like, you have almost lived outside of Oregon longer than you have lived in Oregon because you left college and never came home, basically, yeah. Which is wild to me to think about that. Maybe don't say that too loud. Maybe they won't have me come up and speak at Manifest as an Oregonian living somewhere else. But
yeah, but you know, as we're going through, you know, some of this as we're talking with our lead minister and reading through this book, Emotionally Healthy Discipleship. Jody's been preaching on it. I hadn't really thought about grief as a loss of control.
Yeah.
That's not something that really registered, but as he kind of started talking about it, I was like, man, it really is. Like there's something I don't, in the midst of grief, I feel like I'm losing control.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's the loss that kind of drives me to that. Is there something about grief that, that you really struggle with personally?
I have a hard time grieving in the moment. I feel like I've always put like on a game face, you know, whether it be a funeral or whether it be something. It doesn't, I feel like I'm dial up internet. Like it takes a long time for that final file to finally download. And when it does, then grief really hits me. But, and I think grief hits me in different places. Like I think there's music and movies and inspirational moments. I get choked up very easily. And a lot of times for me, it's tied to some sort of other thing going on, you know, in my life or something. It wasn't until like later that I grieved the loss of my grandmother. It wasn't until, you know, a couple years in at Kansas that I grieved, you know, kind of our ministry experience in Washington State, you know, and that kind of stuff. It's, I have a very flight or flight, fight or flight response that kind of just kind of kicks in when grief kicks in. And it's like, all right, we're going to fight through this or I'm going to run away from it or, you know, kind of this game face. And so I think I struggle with grieving in the moment and trying to be there. However, there is some self-awareness there. And so I do try to like pull myself in and experience those moments.
Yeah. Well, emotion,
I don't know.
No, emotion wasn't void in my life. I mean, I saw my dad emotional many times.
Yeah.
And I saw my grandfather emotional many times. And so it wasn't so much emotion for me, but grief was not something I ever really understood. I know, what I recognized early on was the grief of others was a holy and sacred emotion.
Okay.
And kind of what I mean by that is if you gave me a choice to do a wedding or a funeral, I'd rather do a funeral any day as a minister.
Really?
Because what you find in those moments of grief is people don't have the energy to put up walls. They don't have the energy to put up defenses, and they are, as a general rule, so much more receptive to receiving the grace and the mercy of God. And I think it's because when we get into grief, we surrender that loss of control, and we are now available more than, maybe more than we ever will be, to really experience that presence. And it's just holy and it's sacred in those moments. Whereas with other aspects, we have control over the planning. Things are going as they are. Everyone has their own opinion. And that can happen around funerals as well. But but to a large degree, people are just really receptive.
Right.
And there's a holiness around grief that it's not an interruption to life. It's an opportunity to witness the grace of God in those moments of grief. Mm-hmm. As we're putting something away and looking forward to kind of what comes next. And so I just, it's only been recently that I have really, not really allowed myself, but try to encourage myself to experience that for my own. And maybe some of it comes from being a minister. You feel like you have to kind of wall off some of that so you can be a source of strength for folks that are going through difficult times. And it becomes too easy to carry that wall forward and just kind of prevent yourself from being in that moment as well. So,
yeah,
but there's a lot of good stuff. Peter Scazzaro says, find the hidden treasures in grief. It's like, that's,
what does that, weird, but, what does that mean?
Yeah. But there are some things.
Well, I think there's some beautiful moments in grief. I remember at, and I know we're talking a lot about funerals, and grief is not just about funerals, but I remember at my Uncle Norman's funeral, they asked my dad, was in a singing group at the time, to sing one of their songs. And I was probably know this about me, but I like to sing. And I like to mimic too. And usually when I'm song leading, I'm mimicking my father. I think I've told him this. I've told other people this. They're like, wow, you just have this confidence when you're leading singing. And I'm like, well, I just pretend I'm my dad. And I've always seen my dad. I really have. I've always seen my dad as this big ball of confidence whenever he's leading singing, kind of a thing. And it's cool. But at this funeral, they stood in the back. And I remember my dad putting his hand on my back and he pulled me close. He says, hey, I need you to sing just like me and with me as loud as you can, because I don't know if I can make it through this song. Yeah. And if I stumble, you have to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
And I that's a vivid memory in my head. I don't even know if he would remember that. But, you know, and it was one of their songs that they always sang. So I knew it word for word. I knew his part. Note for note. And I don't even remember if he stumbled at all and I jumped in there, but I just remember singing as loud as I could. I remember him getting a little choked up, and I remember like that we were just singing through it. And it was a beautiful song. I mean, it's a beautiful song about going to heaven and being with Jesus and mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff. And that is like, you know, that's a crown jewel for me, that in that grief that my dad and I could share that moment. We could share in the loss of my Uncle Norman, who was an elder in the church, who was a mentor to my father, who, you know, I remember, you know, it was like another set of grandparents for me. My Auntie Frances is still alive today, yeah. And I love going and seeing her and stuff like that when we go back to Oregon. And so, you know, and I think also moving on, like one of the gems of grief like that is when we talk about, you know, the death of a ministry. That there can be a birth of a new ministry and things like that. And so there, you know, there's a gem there. There's something beautiful that can come out of that space. I also think of, you know, if a restaurant closes down, most of the time something new is going to go into that spot. Mm-hmm. You know? And so sometimes in our life, when something passes, something goes away, that means that something new can kind of fill that void or fill that spot in those places. And I think sometimes that's hard for us to fully grasp, especially in the moment. But, you know, I look forward to this. The only part of moving that I enjoy is setting up your house because you're in a new space, you know?
Right. I like these three phases that he kind of talked about as you kind of go through them. And it's not the... This is not the five stages of grief or all of
no,
this.
No, it's not.
But there's
which are good, but we're not talking about those today.
And the first one, as he talks about, is something that I really connect with, which is pay attention to pain.
Yeah.
And one of the things, if you look at the culture that we're in, I mean, we're doing everything we can to not feel pain.
Yeah.
The opioid crisis is in epidemic stages because as soon as you experience pain, pain pills are the easiest prescription to get.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think of that we're here because we're trying to avoid a sense that your body is telling you something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember being in Honduras and I hurt my back playing soccer. And one of the guys that was there on the trip says, well, I have some Loratab you can use. And I'm like, no, I'm good.
Yeah. And,
he said, well, it'll help the pain. And I said, yeah. And that's the problem.
That's right.
Because if I take that Loratab, I'm going to be feeling better. And I'm probably going to go do something I shouldn't do. And I'm going to hurt my back even worse. And I'm going to be in worse shape to get home.
Yeah.
I said, I need the pain to keep me from doing something that's going to damage my body any worse.
Yeah.
And he said, all right. He goes, well, if it gets unbearable, let me know. And it was excruciating. I mean, I've not experienced that kind of pain in my life. But pay attention to the pain. You know, that's that first stage is kind of sitting there. Resist the temptation to do whatever it takes to numb it. But pay attention to it. What am I supposed to learn from it? What is it leading me to? What is it guiding me towards?
Do you ever think we're in that same sense? This is off. We're off script, baby. Here we go. Put it into four-wheel drive. Curveball Aaron coming in here.
Okay. I was like, we're not off script yet. Are you about to take us off script?
Well, I'm about ready to. I don't trust this GPS. Here we go. Do you ever think that sometimes as Christians, or better yet, let's be behind the beards because we're ministers here. Do you ever feel like as ministers that we can be too quick? This is going to sound weird. So help talk me through it or whatever, but we are too quick to try to give pain or this kind of stuff, emotional pain, scars or other things like that. We're too quick to try to give it all to God, all to Jesus, all at the moment. You know what I mean? Like as soon as it's happening, we're like, oh, I give this all to you. I give it all to you. I give it all to you. And yet we have so many moments where, you know, like Jesus was praying in the garden and he was praying with this intensity and he was dealing with this emotional stress, this emotional grief, this emotional pain that he's about to go through, you know, on the cross and all that sort of stuff. And he sits with it and has it and he's going through it with God. And it's not till the end of his prayer that we kind of hear this, you know, that when he went and raised Lazarus, like he had these emotional symptoms that he cried, he wept, and he was there. But sometimes, like, we are really quick, like, oh, you got some ibuprofen? Great, you know. And we kind of treat our relationship with God, especially as a minister, like, all right, I prayed about it, so we're just going to move on. We're going to disconnect in this sense.
So I don't think we're too quick to give it to God.
Okay.
I do think we might be too resistant to receive it back when he says, I'm not ready to take this from you just yet. So I think that's where the disconnect there lies is I think our immediate response when something not of God comes into our lives, whether it's the result of sin, the result of brokenness, the result of our own failure. When any of those things come on, give it to God. But sometimes God is going to say, hang on to that for a second because there's something we need to learn through this. And I think that's the point where we're like, oh, God's abandoned me because he's not taking this from me instead of going, okay, so because you haven't taken this from me, what am I supposed to do with it? And I think that's where we really fail. Is then we just kind of throw our hands up in the air in exasperation and God a liar.
That was exasperation for everyone listening to the audio of our podcast. Wanted to make sure you're feeling really a part of the show.
So interesting. It's kind of my thought.
Okay. It's a good thought. I like it.
The problem
I think
is
sometimes I do. Right? Like I do. I think sometimes people are too afraid of living in the moments of emotions that sometimes that we expect. I think it's almost tied to a sense of prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
But not in a money sense, but in a, my life is supposed to be great and good and happy.
No, but why do we take, why do we take comfort in Job?
I don't. That's a terrible book.
But when we, anyone talks about grief, why do we go to Job?
Mm-hmm. Because there's something great that happens at the end.
10 you know? Times more he gets at the end. And so we're like, oh yeah, man, just be faithful like Job and you're going to get 10 times more in the end.
Sidebar.
So
how crappy would it be to be Job's wife? Because 10 times more kids? Like, that's a lot of years of prego-ness. You know, like, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of little ones to raise. I mean, I guess they have servants and all sorts of stuff like that, since they have 10 times more. But yeah. I always thought about I've not always thought about that. I just thought about that recently in the years, probably because we've had a kid. He's a 4-year-old. We've thought about having another one, all that kind of good stuff. And I was like, you know, man, like, at some point you're just like, no, I'm good. I'm done having kids. And the guy's like, I'm going to bless you with 10 more kids. And you're like, all right. That's enough slices. Have you seen that? That's my favorite. That's my favorite meme.
That's enough.
Here, have a sacrifice. Oh, thank you very much. Here, have another sacrifice. Oh, no, that's okay. Here, take another sacrifice.
Well, anyway, I think it's hard for us to wait, though. I mean, because I think part of us wanting to give it away so quickly and not wanting to sit there is, it's like every other aspect of our lives, God's timing is different than ours. And waiting in the midst of grief and pain is not easy. It's emotional. It's taxing. It's depressing. And so we want to just kind of rush through it. But there is something important that comes from just sitting and waiting for God to come through and show the way forward so that we can see what comes out on the other side.
Yeah.
I was... I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday or not, but I was watching, it was a preacher and he was using Tiger Woods as an example. And Tiger Woods hit one of the most historic golf shots at the Masters when he was at his peak. He's in a playoff. Mm-hmm. He hits this shot. He's off in the rough. He hits this shot 25 feet left of the hole and it ends up rolling down. It pauses as the Nike logo is rolling into the cup. And he ends up winning the Masters. And that's the shot everyone sees. It's the greatness. But the shot no one ever plays is the horrible shot that got him into a position to have to pull off this miraculous shot. And so you have this one of the worst shots he's ever hit in his life, followed up by one of the greatest shots that everybody remembers. But you have to go through that difficulty and you got to sit in it and you got to wait for it. so that you're there for what is birthed out of it. And I think a lot of times because we're not willing to just sit and wait in pain and grief, we don't get to experience the beauty of what God wants to raise up out of those ashes.
Well, it's kind of the beauty of that Pixar movie, right? The Inside Out.
Oh, Inside Out.
See the beautiful full spectrum of all emotions and that like we don't need to... we need to experience all emotions. Like it's not all about joy. Like it's okay to have joy and sadness. That's
together
a great,
at the same together, time.
Right? Yeah. And that's part of this, like, phases of grief here, you know? And so we pay attention to pain. We wait for the patience of God timings, but then we embrace the new that kind of arises from that. There's that joy that can arise from that. There is, you know, the aspect of like the phoenix coming back to life and something. And it might look completely different. It might look completely different. And I don't know, like sometimes it's good. Sometimes it like, I don't know, I guess like embraces the new that arise does not mean that the new is always going to be better either. I guess that's what I was trying, what I wanted to try to get to. Sometimes we always think the Job story, like the new is going to be better and greater. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just embracing a new lifestyle, you know, a new life. This is a bad example. I know it's a bad example. I miss our house in Topeka. I miss our house in Topeka. I miss the fact that it was three stories. I miss that we had a basement. I miss that I had a space upstairs that I could go to. And I had this beautiful lookout and view and everything. But guess what, Josh? I love our house in Gladewater. I love that I've got beautiful oak trees in my front yard that drop branches and scare the crap out of me. I do like that we have a nice large backyard that I can, you know, let the dogs out. I couldn't do that in Kansas, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Like, and so, like, I miss my house. Do I think this house is better than our house in Kansas? No, I wish my house in Kansas was in place of this house, but on this property, kind of an idea. So Manu is not necessarily better, but there's an embracing that's here. You know, I do like that my podcasting, my computer is out in the living room. So it's no longer like I'm escaping to get away from my family. Instead, I can be present with my family while doing something I love. You know, that's been a healthy and a great change for Lauren and I. I love that Sam's room is a lot closer to our room than it was in Kansas, and that Sam wasn't pointed towards, you know, the street, which we didn't realize was so sketchy until we moved here to a quiet neighborhood. You know,
right.
We got used to random people walking by and showing
up. I think that someone have to be encouraged to embrace the new that comes out of it, because it may be very different. And it's not better. It's not worse. It's just different. It's new.
It's just different.
And we have to be willing to embrace those things that are different.
I feel like God, we said that a lot.
Something new in you. And
we said that a lot when we took over directorship of Tallgrass.
Yeah.
We spent the entire first year with staff who loved the old version of Tallgrass, and we fell on our knees and we're like, listen, it was great under the old directors. We appreciate, we love them, and we respect what they did for camp, and we can't recreate that. So we're going to do camp the way that we know how to do camp. And so it's not better. It's not worse either, so knock it off. But it's not better. Right. it's just different.
And it's authentic.
It's authentic. So buy in to the fact that this is different. To be honest, I struggle with that right now. They have a new director at Tallgrass, and I honestly am so happy that they have new blood and new things going on there. And I have to constantly remind myself, Aaron, it's not better, and it's not worse. So knock it off.
That's right. That's right.
It's just different.
It's just not you.
And maybe it's not me. And maybe that's what that's all there is to it. I'm not there to recreate it or to redo it. I'm not even there to experience it. So get over it. It's fine. You know, it's just different. Same thing in your church. If somebody takes over a ministry, you know, that maybe you've been a part of
like
for
small groups
for all these years. Yeah, like small groups or I don't know. You have a new youth minister come in. Don't ever say to them,
well, that's not how the last guy did it.
Okay, but where is the last guy? He's not here. So this is the way that I'm going to do it. And it's not a hard-headedness. It's a being authentic to who we are. This is how we're going to do it. So there is somebody out there who needed to hear just that clip. There's somebody out there in the universe of Behind the Beards that needed to hear that clip, that it's okay to let somebody do things differently, run the ministry differently than the last person. It does not have to be a carbon copy. Matter of fact, usually a ministry starts to go downhill when leadership changes and it's a carbon copy. And this is a proven fact. If you look at church plants, the number one thing that fails at a church plant is when there is not a successful handoff of leadership. When all they try to do is carbon copy their leader, the church planter who originally founded it, when they just try to carbon copy that instead of being authentic and changing and moving forward, That's when church plants start to shrink in size or start to fail because they're no longer being authentic to what a church plant is, which is embracing the community and building a church around that community. And whereas they try to then impose past leadership kind of values on them, which is crazy. I'd never thought about that. And I went to a seminar and about church plants, and they talked about that. They said, oh, church plants are really great. In about 10 to 15 years is when you'll really find out whether or not they are going to be successful in the community. And that's mm-hmm. usually when you have to pass off the torch or the leadership, kind of a, like that. Because usually to plant a church, you have to have a huge personality that draws people in. So anyway, I found that kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it's all a part of embracing something new. I think a behind the beers moment is just that, man. Grief is hard.
Yeah.
There's a lot
but of don't be afraid of it.
Grief that we want to kind of push down, stuff down in, but confront it. Let it sit, you know, in your life for a little bit. So pay attention to the pain. Wait and be patient for God to come and do work. And then when something new arises out of those things, embrace it. And find out what God is doing in the newness of what comes out of that grief. So
grief is like a person fresh out of the baptistry. Do you really want to get wet? Nah, but you really do want to embrace them and love them because you're excited for them, yeah. You know? So embrace.
So everybody needs grief. A nice little wet hand.
That's right.
Over here, right.
That's right.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Good stuff.
Man. Maybe.
Grief.
Who knows?
Be patient.
Hey, we want to thank you all for being here today. We appreciate you. If you enjoy the fact that I'm using AirPods instead of a headset, please let us know. I'm just kidding. Please don't let us know. That was kind of cool that I figured that out. But we do want to remind you of something that is dear to our hearts, which is Galatians 6:9. Don't grow weary doing good. This world is messy. This life is messy. People are grieving. People are hurting. People need to know the love of Jesus. And the only reason that they're going to listen to you is because you're doing good. Not because you're debating them, arguing them, yelling at them, forcing them to change, but because you're doing good in their lives. But don't do it because of you. Do it because of who Christ is. So do something good in his name. I'm Aaron. This is Josh. And we'll see you next week on Behind.
That's right. The Beards.
The Beards.
We're talking about love next week, right? Yep. Are you going to be ready for love next week?
I'll be ready for love. All Behind right. the Beards.
Till we're all growing a beard, a man's face should never be bare. We just want some facial hair. We're anticipating, yeah, everyone's waiting for beard.
I didn't leave you hanging there for a sec.
I know, it was brutal, man. Brutal.